Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Bad Batch Season 3 currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts and squad mates. Tony Sindelar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds.
Kat Benish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hey, you were definitely trying to remember it was me last time. You've done me twice in a row, and now you've done Tony, which is good. And also, I feel like very peppy because we just spent 20 minutes talking about Star Trek uniforms, so we're doing great.
You don't have to immediately refer to things that we did not record and put in the show.
We also spent 30 minutes talking about the secret to, like, the Holy Grail. I know that one's not true, but...
Or is it? Mm. Well, we are here to do... We're doing double duty because we skipped an episode last week because I was under the weather. So we are going to cover
Dan
both.
Dan had strep.
Thanks for sharing.
Wow, HIPAA violation
HIPAA
there.
We're going to cover episodes 12, Juggernaut, and episode 13, Into the Breach, which I think makes it actually a pretty good two-parter.
It was a good duo. Did you watch them back-to-back, Tony, or did you think that we were actually going to do our homework last week?
I thought we were going to record an episode of A Complicated Profession last week, so I watched the episode in preparation, and then I watched it again this week in re-preparation. So... A little peek behind the scenes.
What was it like?
Or
the
what
second
it's like
time?
To collaborate with Dan and Kat,
who have a like viral vector in our house.
I will say I did not remember a lot about what happened in episode 12, Juggernaut, which is usually not a great sign for an episode. But I watched it again. I enjoyed it. It was fine. It feels Yeah, it feels like it's a little bit more of the filler episode. Not as much stuff moves forward as, say, in episode 13, Into the Breach.
Yeah. I think it's very much about ratcheting it up tension, both of these. It's just tension, very getting closer and closer to the prison break. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to do a brief summary, in episode 12, we have two plot lines. One is Omega being returned to Tantus and being thrown in with the rest of the kidnapped kids that we saw the first time, or a couple weeks ago. The second... is that the team decides that they need to figure out how to get to Tantus, and although they don't know where it is, Crosshair suggests that they might be able to find someone who does know, which in this case is Admiral Rampart, who, if you have forgotten, was the villain in season one, I believe.
Yep. Went to prison for war crimes. The system works.
Is that
everybody.
What it was? He couldn't remember why he went to prison.
He goes to prison. Looked it up. He's basically they pin the entire destruction of the Kaminoans
of
city on him.
Yeah.
Did he do it?
Yeah.
Well,
he was part of it.
He did. He followed the orders and blew it up.
Yeah.
But he was not in charge of it. He just very gleefully blew it up.
Yeah.
But he's also not.
Was somebody above him giving direct orders about?
I think pretty much they make him a fall guy. Like. I think either Tarkin or the Emperor essentially tells him to do it. And
I feel like he was pretty complicit. So,
100%.
You know, I was just following orders, by the way, mainly, is actually not an excuse in any. Yes.
Right, but
for leveling a city full of
let's
full
put
of
it
innocence.
This way. Yeah. The people who throw him into jail definitely
were also in on it.
Definitely knew. Because it's the Grand Vizier, basically, who works for Palpatine.
Mainly, I think this is like basically one of the few people in jail in Star Wars who seems to be in jail for the right reason.
So we should
break
him out.
Yeah, one guy at this labor camp that's, there for the right reason. Also, still super racist, even in labor.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's not, hasn't softened him at all.
He hasn't turned over a new leaf, but it's only been a couple of years, months? I don't know. It's unclear. Time passage. Anyways, most of the episode is a set piece of them trying to break him out and engaging in some combat shenanigans with a tank.
This had very strong Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade vibes for me the entire time. I mean, especially with the stormtrooper gang going into the canyon wall and... Yeah.
It made me think a bit of that scene from the set piece from Solo with the train a little bit, where they're...
Yeah, a little bit.
I did think of that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I felt like, mainly notable, this is an episode... one of the things I struggle with a little bit with Bad Batch, especially watching episodes in proximity to each other, this is an episode where, a lot of people die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you are probably not supposed to think about it.
Or like,
a lot of people just got blown up.
Yeah.
And then later episodes, it's like, we're stunning people again because to make up for all the people we murdered in the last episode.
You kind of feel like there might be like a writer at the very end of Sleeping Beauty. Trust me, this makes sense. The animated movie. the fairy godmothers, as Sleeping Beauty is dancing with the prince, are arguing over should the dress be pink or blue. Pink, blue. And I sometimes think, to your point, Tony, the writers' rooms are like, we're going to stun everyone. No, we're going to kill them all. And depending on who wrote the episode, depends on what happens.
Mm-hmm. I think there are times when they do it and it's expedient, like in the second episode we're talking about, where it's like they're running around, like sneaking around. Like, yeah, stunning people makes sense there. And I think they make a good faith effort to like stun people when it's feasible, but if it's not feasible, it's not like they're gonna be like, well, we give up.
The I will say the for me the tank, this was just like a cool episode too, like just seeing the tank in motion, seeing the I love seeing the Bad Batch like in their element, because we don't see too much of that in the show, working together as a unit, especially with Crosshair back. I'm gonna call them they're not anti-aircraft, but essentially the
missiles,
and then the anti-missile, there's a word for it, I'm sure, defense.
Yeah.
That was very cool to watch animated. That was just like actually really, really
There's a bunch of good subtle animation stuff. I mean, I think what you're describing essentially is like competency porn, right? Which is like enjoying watching people who are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
And like this is, to your point, this is the stuff the Bad Batch, like this is easily a mission the Bad Batch would have been dispatched on during their heyday, is like, all right, we got to get this guy out of this tank. And he's like, yep, send the Bad Batch.
And Wrecker's like, yeah, attacking a tank. It's like good times.
Yeah, like the good old days.
You know, I think what kind of makes this episode not work as much for me is my own peculiarities, which is I just find the design of that tank, which goes way back in Star Wars, boring. It just feels, it has that like aggressively designed to be sold as a toy.
It looks like a Cybertruck. It 100% looks like a Cybertruck.
It looks like they built the radio controlled model of it first. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, plug it in, you know, we got to sell these to kids, put it in the thing.
The thing that I do like, I like little bits of this, particularly I enjoyed Wrecker and Crosshair with the Plan 55. There's a nice fun callback there where they're like, the compartment's magnetically sealed, which is a reference to the trash compactor.
Yeah.
So when they shoot, it ricochets everywhere and then hits, the guards, which I thought was kind of fun. And also a moment where it felt like Crosshair actually he has a couple bits here where he has like really good aim, cause he's not really thinking about it.
Yeah.
He's not in his head as much. He shoots a gun out of Rampart's hand.
Yeah. That was good to see.
Which is kind of a nice little moment there. I also enjoy Noshir Dalal, who plays Rampart, is really good at that part. He's just, he's perfectly smarmy.
He's so annoying.
Exactly.
He's so annoying.
In that, I'm very pompous and very stuck up ways, but I think in this and the next episode, he does really well.
His whole thing, we're jumping to the next episode, the fact of I can't wear that, that's a captain, was really funny.
Yeah, oh God, yeah.
Yeah, the Tony, you may appreciate this. So he has done several Star Wars voices in other properties, including, I think he was in the Squadrons game, but he's also most recently in the Jedi Survivor, in which I believe he voices what's his name, the Bode, who is one of your key allies throughout most of that game. And you're like, so he does those, like, and that does not, he's, I don't believe he's actually British, but I think he does a pretty good British accent in this.
Mysterio in the
That's right, he was also Mysterio in Spider-Man 2. Yep. Yeah. So he's kind of all over
the place. Who also has a kind of a very, punchable face kind of voice.
Yes. The one, Bode's model is actually built arrogant on his face, which is weird.
Yeah. So, lot of arrogance to him.
So, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a standout episode. It's connective tissue, right? It gets us from point A to point B. We've got Rampart. We're going to go off and have our plan to figure out how to get
they reintroduced
Tantus.
Rampart, which seemed like they needed to do. Having seen the next episode, he hangs around, so it's not like we just remember this guy, we get the little thing from him, and then we're done. It's like, no, he's going to be part of the story. Fee comes back and is part of the kind of a sidekick to the gang. I think it's, maybe it's kind of a B episode. It's not one of the ones that you're going to remember as like, oh, yeah, that was one of the great Bad Batch episodes, but not bad.
No, had good pacing. It was interesting.
It's fine.
It was totally fine and interesting.
Gets from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the second episode, which is Into the Breach, feels like kind of the beginning of our final arc here. On Tantus, we have Omega basically tells all the other kids that she's already escaped once and she's going to do it again. Yeah. And she concocts a plan to get into the wall where they put their blood samples.
Using their own toys and puzzles against the Imperials.
Well, she also steals a tool from Emery. And we get a little bit of both this and the previous episode. Hemlock explains a little bit, like, kind of again the deal why she's so important. They need her blood for the transference
she's
of the M count.
Mm-hmm. Some sort.
Yeah. And we also she gets a nice bit when talking to Emery. And Emery says, you know, like, I'm glad you're safe.
Yeah.
And she says, Am I? You know, and you're like, and between that and the fact that she recognizes Emery gave her doll to Eva is one of those moments where you're like, okay, there's leverage there.
I like the little cast of the four child prisoners.
Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
No, I just think, you know, they're all adorable in their own sympathetic little way, but also, I mean, it's a nice little group of the five of them, right? And they're all very visually distinct. They choose aliens that, you know, we've seen before, but are also, like, literally there's a blue one, a red one, and a green one, and, you know, they have very distinct features, and you know, they all look and adorable. Not all of them look like children that should not be in jail.
Yeah. They also do a really nice job of animating them, so they are feel like distinct personalities, so with very little, they've done a lot. And I know I always point out, like, some of the little details, but I think one of my favorite things in this episode, and I think one of them was in the previous episode too, were just little minutiae and ticks of the hands that just make you really appreciate, like, the thought goes into these. So the one that I had to, like, rewind and watch is at one point at the very end of this episode, the owl kid, the little baby, is basically taking his one of the chips they have and trying to feed it to his little owl toy, which is, like, I will say right now, definitely what small kids do.
Yeah, someone on that animation thing is like, I have a small kid.
I have a small child. Yeah, let's do this. And at the same time, then when Omega's talking about her plan to escape, she's shuffling that shit between her fingers like she's a gambler of some sort. Mm-hmm. And just comes up and evokes the confidence. And then the other one that I really liked, just little things they do that just make
business.
Again, great animation, is at one point, I think, they've rescued Rampart and they're walking into the Fee ship. And as they come down, they pass Gonki. And Wracker just taps Gonki on the head and walks. I don't know. It's little things like that that just make it.
Yeah.
Even the pause is certainly not the strongest thing. It is very enjoyable
character,
to watch.
Character moments, little bits of stage business that are consistent with who those characters are.
So the little, it seems like the youngest of the group, or at least, I mean, they're aliens. We don't know how they age, but the seemingly least developed physically in terms of age of the group is the little owl. Creature, and that's the one that we saw Cad Bane steal.
Yeah. I think his name is Bairn.
Bairn.
He's a little the internet tells Bairn. Me.
I think he's the owl bear.
Tarlafar, which we have seen. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but Tarlfar, Far.
Okay. Also pronounced.
Oh, I skipped an A. Tarlafar. Apparently, there was a live action one in the Solo movie. So,
okay. Yes, there was.
Omega almost gets caught breaking into the wall, but manages to get everything back in time in one of those fun intercut sequences with the doctor slowly walking up into the vault. Meanwhile,
and this is we do get a little bit of, like, I don't know, office politics behind the scenes, where basically, so there are other doctors who do not appear to be clones, but we don't really know what their deal is, and they don't seem to they don't seem to love the kind of liberties that is being taken.
And it's interesting too, because it's Hemlock who brings her Omega into the vault and says, "This is your new home." And then the other scientist seems to think it was Emery's decision to keep her there, which is like, sure, whatever. But it made me think that Emery perhaps, maybe consciously or subconsciously, is hoping that Omega will do another escape attempt.
Yeah, it's unclear how much, whose side she is on, and how much her confidence has been shaken. I think that's sort of a question we're going to see answered in these last couple episodes. Meanwhile, the Bad Batch and Rampart basically meet up with Echo, and who has stolen an Imperial shuttle.
as you do.
I mean, that's like, it's a day that ends in Y for all of them. And they're going to use it to infiltrate an Imperial relay station on Coruscant, because they need to do that to find the coordinates of Tantus. The coordinates are so secure, they're only uploaded basically to the Navi computers when you the ships are going there. So we get a fun bit of infiltration as they all go to the station, and they have to lie about who they are, and they have to get, Rampart has to pretend to be a captain to get them in and dress down these younger officers or whatever. And then eventually we determine that not only do they uplink it, but they only uplink it like after the ships leave the station. So their plan to like get it out of the Navi computer of the science ship that's going there isn't going to work. Instead, Echo needs to sneak on, disable the sensors, and then the Bad Batch shuttle will like glom on as they go off. And we get a very tense ending bit where they're like, is it going to happen? Like, is Echo going to get the sensors offline in time? And that's a fun bit of...
And because Crosshair missed the ship, I did think there was a non-insignificant chance that we were going to end up with just Echo on Tantus.
I was totally prepared for that. I was prepared for that, for Echo to be...
Well, now what?
Himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still even a little unclear, like, because they do the, like, they get to, basically, they connect to the ship just before it launches, and it's like, is their presence going to be detected? What's going to go on? Because, you know, this is basically, you know, the last episode was basically action movie Bad Batch. This is stealth operation Bad Batch. And they don't do the best, right? You know, they've got to knock out an officer and they stun another guy. And they leave a decent number of breadcrumbs around that, you know, they've
stolen a shuttle, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're counting on...
They're moving pretty fast and loose.
Right, but they're also counting on the fact that there's a lot of traffic in and out, I think, and the question is, even if you find out that they were in there, you don't know what they were doing or where they were looking, right? They could be any number of things they were doing there, and so they have at least
computer
a little
techs
bit of time.
Get stunned all the time, you know, recreational, on the job stunning. It's just, it's office pranks.
It is interesting, though, that Echo did stun a stormtrooper on the ship, which makes you wonder, like, how long of a trip is that?
Yeah, that is going to be a challenge for him to... I mean...
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they're not going to do anything with that. It's just for suspense.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
You never know. They haven't picked up threads, so I don't expect them to.
I know they did the kind of strange thing where they basically, like, scrubbed down their Bad Batch armor to be...
Black.
But they don't just have stormtrooper armor. Yeah. And they do make the choice, Wrecker, who cannot pass as a stormtrooper, you stay on the ship. But it's kind of weird where it's like, they're like, the best we could do is 50% of a disguise.
Well, also, even just standard clone armor seems like it would be better because there are still clones out there. But
I liked it. I feel like working with the animation that had it sort of like goes well with, I think, where the Catchum is going. Sort of, it's an off books, you know, elite commando unit. It made it in my mind of like, it's the whole thing. There's something called the red shoe effect, right? Where, like, if you walk in and you're in a suit and, like, red sneakers, even though it's dressed down, people will treat you with more respect because you're walking with all that confidence. And some ways, because, like, they walk in with the stormtroopers that are clearly not belonging, it makes you think, well, they must belong here because wouldn't they have tried harder? So yeah, I liked it.
I also appreciate, in terms of your following up on your little bits of sort of stage business that our characters do, Rampart continually brushing off his uniform.
Yeah.
Which I liked a lot. I also like that he's stuck on that ship with them too, and he's like, "Wait a second, this is not what I'm supposed
to
be doing."
This is not the plan.
Sorry,
plans change.
I enjoy any time that the good guys have to work with them. I mean, this is what always made Callus so delightful in Rebels.
Yes.
Is being forced into dealing with all our unorthodox characters. So I don't think Rampart is due for a redemption arc in any way, but
they're not
I
really
do enjoy
that
he's.
That.
You know, his self-interest is sort of just aligned for the moment.
Yeah, I think he may get shot into the show, or at least find himself. Maybe he's going to take the fall and end up back in
that would be great.
Back at another labor camp in a worse climate. I don't know.
That's how they demote you. Keep going to worse and worse labor camps until you're just in
on
space
Tatooine.
Or something. I don't know.
Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see a bunch of droids. Felt like we hadn't seen a lot of droids recently. Yeah, there's a nice little platoon of R units and some mouse droids getting...
I like that Echo goes up the little chute as well, which is kind of fun.
Like, I'm droid on my mom's side.
Yeah, I like that too. It was a little bit where they're walking around on the station. I'm like, Echo, of all of them, Echo kind of stands out a lot.
Yeah.
And nobody really gives him a second look. But again, it's the, like you said, it's the confidence of the we belong here.
I also wondered, you know, they're on the station now that's got all, it's, were there any clone troopers on the station?
No, I think we're like it mostly, we see the ones on Tantus, but the, other than that, it's mostly stormtroopers, although they haven't really answered the question of where all the clones are.
Where are the clones? Yeah, I wonder if just the stormtroopers are, I mean, we've seen the status of stormtroopers by a New Hope era. I feel like, you know, it seems like situational awareness of stormtroopers fell off dramatically in that, you know, even just the two guys that Rampart dresses out, they're like, we just started. Yeah. And he's like, no, get lost. And they're like, all right, we're not going to report this to anybody.
Well, those guys in the last episode, in the Juggernaut episode.
I would say they were good. The ones who were on top of the Juggernaut, like
they were efficient.
Like they knock out the guns.
Yeah.
Early stormtroopers.
Yes.
Before they get all the standards get relaxed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a couple of nice really shots in this too. I think the one that was most notable is towards the end of the second episode where we're looking down at
Tantus. We cut to the tables.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which felt really nice.
And you compared a couple of times when we were watching to the prison Andor. And that felt a shot that was pulled from, they're like, we like Andor too. We're just gonna borrow that style. Yeah, that was pretty
good. That was very striking. One of the best shots in that episode. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're getting all their animation credits in there. It's you know. It's,
well, this is the thing that does make me wonder. I mean, and this is speculation we've talked about before, but it is the moment where you think about what is the future of Star Wars animated shows, because like they have gotten so good at this, like after the several different shows, that it feels weird to be like,
let's close up shop.
Let's never do anything again. I don't know. I mean.
Dan, how many days until May 4th, and maybe they announce something?
only about 10 days or so, and we're getting obviously Tales of the Empire in there too. But again, that feels like more of a stopgap because it's miniseries.
It feels like they should just be doing some kind of Star Wars animated thing, 10 episodes a year for forever until it's not profitable.
Yeah, essentially, especially with all that live action stuff, sort of paralleling. Anyways, I don't know. There's a lot of, feels to me like there's still a rich vein of stuff in storytelling, especially in this period too, which they've fixated on so much between Clone Wars and Rebels, providing the two sort of, bookends. This only covers maybe a couple, there's like 10, 15 years in there still.
I know, but I
and so many characters and et cetera.
I don't disagree, but I would like them to mine some different places, right?
Kessel? Mining.
Spice.
No. Mining spice.
Spice. Castle. I thought you said castle. Like, what are you talking about?
Dan loves castles.
What is a rampart if not part of a castle?
Mm-hmm.
See? It's a shrug. Yeah, I got it. Is it Friday? Yeah, Friday night's odd for us. We get some weird energy Friday nights.
All right. Are we done? Do we want any more comments about the episodes?
Done with everything.
Okay.
It's over.
Great.
This is it. There's two episodes left. Seems like they're going to Tantus.
Yes.
I mean, they literally are. Episode 14, Flash Strike, and episode 15, The Cavalry Has Arrived.
So clearly they're going to get her out. I think the thing that's going to be really fun to see is how are they going to destroy Tantus, right? Because they have to bury, either physically or literally or both, Hemlock's research.
But we know that it succeeds.
No, but it could be Leibniz and Newton. Like, it could be...
But we know Project Necromancer, which they refer to, is the Emperor
cloning
project,
right? That's just a billing code. They can use that.
They can just repurpose
but
that.
It has to get set back somehow, right?
I think... one way you set something back is you take out the chief scientist. So,
Or Hemlock himself.
That is him. Yeah.
Anyways.
Well, he's is he the chief scientist? Is Emery the chief scientist? It's very confusing.
Sorry,
let's talk about like hierarchies.
Which one's went to the academy?
Oh dear. All right.
Reference acknowledged.
Shall we move along to some reader mail?
Yeah. These are not the episodes you're expecting or asking looking for.
All right. Well, we've got I don't think we only have one email at acp@theincomparable.com, but you can email us at acp@theincomparable.com if you want to share your thoughts on The Bad Batch or Star Wars in general or what have you? This comes from Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Star Wars pals. I've been really enjoying season 3 of The Bad Batch, and I look forward to listening to the podcast each week. Hey, thanks. So do we. I recently picked up a complete Dash Rendar figure for my collection. Oh. It was only $3. Do you collect any Star Wars merchandise? Do you have a favorite item in your collection? May the Force be with you. Tony's panning over.
I have a lot of Star Wars stuff. I've actually, I recently sold a Dash Rendar action figure on eBay.
For $3?
Maybe you got mine. It was less than five. I don't remember the exact amount.
That would be delightful. Did you sell to a guy named Michael?
I can check my records. Michael, did you buy it from a guy named Tony? There's no way to know. I have a lot of Star Wars junk in my house. I would say Star Wars Legos are probably the thing that takes up the most space by volume.
I'm looking at a Lambda class shuttle over your shoulder there.
I mean, I have a lot of Star Wars. It's
a really
good looking
Lego castle.
I see a Y-wing, X-wing, B-wing.
Yeah.
Why don't you have the S-foils in attack position on the X-wing?
Well, because they're not.
That shelf is too small for all the ships is why. So, yeah, I have a lot of the spaceships is particularly the thing that I enjoy. I had a lot of the action figures in the 90s, the Powers of the Force, Skinner action figures. I'm trying to make sure. I think the key to any collection is curation versus just having stuff. So. Trying to be careful about what takes up space in my small apartment.
I think we're on the other side, which is I don't know that either of us specifically collects any category of things, but we do have a lot of random Star Wars junk.
Well, no, I think it's I am fundamentally obviously trying to have less stuff in the house. That's we're failing miserably.
I was going to say that does not seem like what's actually happening.
Yeah.
You pointed out stuff in my living room. I'm going to put you on blast. So
the challenge is my parents keep bringing me boxes of things.
Oh, they know where you live. That's
I know.
Not good.
And I was able to like put them off for years saying, well, once I finish grad school and like once and then
they
like,
caught on.
They caught on. And now every time they come down, like, oh,
they're
it's
like,
so good
wait
to
a
see
minute.
You.
You
Here's
finished graduate school. You got married. You have a child. You're not coming back for these X-Wing books. We're giving them to you.
Oh, yeah. We literally have a box full of Star Wars books.
I was given a box full of Star Wars books for my parents' attic. The difference is I immediately put all those books into little free libraries.
Yeah, where
so.
It's all my things to do. I brought my
Star Wars books with me.
I was going to say, you don't have to get rid of everything.
No,
you can keep stuff.
We just have a lot of duplicates. The thing that I find that I like, use things that I can use, right? So I think the Star Wars stuff.
Like a lightsaber.
That's not mine. But the things that I really enjoy is we have some Star Wars tiki mugs that are fun.
Oh,
those are cool.
Those are very fun. We got the ones from Galaxy Edge, and then I think we have like a Chewbacca one and a Mandalorian one.
Boba Fett, I think.
Yeah, we have both those. Mm-hmm. And then personally, I don't buy a lot of clothes for myself, but obviously I buy a lot of clothes or used or new for our son. And my favorite thing that I bought is those like for $4 from Hannah Anderson, for anyone's a parent, of like, it's a Yoda hat of Grogu, and he loves wearing it, and he'll go get and grab it and put it on all the time. And it's a great way, especially when we go for walks. Everybody
loves
it because we're in Somerville, right? Everyone talks about it and says it's great, and it's high visibility, so
he's
a lot safer. It's a lot easier to find him. So it's like a
with
win,
a neon
win,
green
win.
Hat.
So that is that's probably the best Star Wars purchase I've made in the past 2 years. That little Grogu hat.
Mm-hmm. I do have my Galaxy's Edge lightsaber here, which I love because it is weighty. It is like solid metal, and it's like feel good. I don't know. I have a few Legos.
You feel safe knowing you have a lightsaber in the house.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's cool. Okay. That's the one you built.
I built that at a cool whole like experience, which was
really cool.
I enjoyed that a lot. I have some Legos. I have a ton of books, ton of Star Wars books. Mm-hmm. Up on my top shelf is my my Star Wars trivia trophy. From the Star Wars Celebration, first place in the bounty hunt, and my Han Solo blaster, which I've had since I was a kid up there. I have a few Pez dispensers. I've never been into collecting stuff. Like, I like little odds and ends, but I've never been like a person who's like, I need to own all the things of this type or all the merchandise or whatever. It's just not, it just doesn't satisfy me. I used to walk past the walls of Funko Pops at Comic Cons and be like, It's just so much plastic. Like, I don't care.
I feel like very fortunate that whatever spell Funko Bops have cast on like 80% of nerds, I'm immune to. Like, I look at that, I'm just like, it's just plastic. And then I go over to Legos and I'm like,
you can build with them.
I need all these.
I will say plushies. Like, I have yet to find, I really was looking for when we were down in, down at Galaxy's Edge, I was prepared to spend a decent amount of money on a loth cat. But there were no loth cats.
They have them now, I think. We determined they had them, but they weren't there
they
yet.
They weren't there yet. Yeah. So, like, that's what I want to get someday is, like, a
loth
cat.
I do have my
plushie.
Little chewy sock monkey up there, which I do love, but I will not pass it along to my child because he will destroy it.
Yeah. So, good question, Michael. Thanks for letting us talk about all the stuff in our houses.
Now you know who to rob.
Yeah.
Enjoy that Dash Rendar.
And do make sure you got it from Tony. Only buy Tony sanctioned merchandise.
I mean, I'm checking my eBay records now.
I think he would have noticed, right? He wrote into us.
I think so. You would hope, right?
You're just like Tony S, or what's your eBay?
Star Wars guy 37.
We don't need to advertise what I'm selling on eBay.
You could create a bidding war. People will like want a part of your life.
What we should do is cut Tony in on a commission and just sell all our stuff on eBay.
Yeah, do you want some magic cards that you can sell for us?
I'm trying to sell my own magic cards first, thank you.
I have all of Dan's magic cards and all my brother's magic cards.
You don't have
Wait,
my
you
magic
have
cards.
All of Dan's
I have
magic
my
cards?
Magic cards.
No, it's
You don't know where they are.
That is true. Yeah.
Is this still a podcast?
Actually,
couples counseling?
No, it's a really big thing on TikTok, right, to do like the whole buying thing. So like we could actually turn this to a live podcast where we just sell off our old stuff. You guys are looking at me like you do not know this brand
like
of
home shopping.
I'm unfamiliar
with
this.
It's really
thing.
Popular. Oh my gosh, no, go down this rabbit hole.
No, I don't want to. Thank you.
Selling things on your TikToks, it's big, I think.
You think.
Really sounded good up until the end.
Yeah.
All right.
Think.
These are a few comments we got via Mastodon, where you can find us at acp@zeppelin.flights.
Important update. I was not able to sell my Dash Rendar, and I left it in a box on the sidewalk, and someone took it. I don't.
If only you had been connected with Michael a little sooner.
I'm sorry, Michael. I feel like I failed you. I should have kept that a little bit longer. I've sold many other Star Wars action figures very cheaply, but no one wanted the Dash Rendar figure I was selling on eBay, and so I put it on the curb.
I'm actually Googling Dash Rendar right now.
Oh, Dash Rendar is Han Solo knockoff from Shadows
Dash
of the
Rendar,
Empire.
You don't know Shadows of the Empire, Kat? The
I
Star
do
Wars
know Shadows of the Empire.
That,
I just remember it's the one where the weird prince wants to marry the princess.
Xizor, yeah.
Yeah.
And the black sun?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He's basically when Han Solo is frozen in carbonite, we need a Han Solo replacement.
Yeah, he's the legally distinct Han Solo to star in the Nintendo 64 video game they made. And he has like he has the
shoulder
the Outrider
pad.
Down?
What's that? The Outrider's ship. Yeah, it's a white.
Which is and it was like
400.
We want to make a ship that looks like the Millennium Falcon, but it's like legally, it's like the Walmart Millennium Falcon. That's basically, can we make a Star Wars property without any Star Wars characters that you recognize? And we're not actually going to make a movie, but we're going to make a book and a soundtrack and a video game and a comic book series
and collect all that sweet money.
Joel
McNeely did a lot of Star Trek music, and he did Shadows of the Empire soundtrack, which is
all right.
Solid.
That concludes our Shadow of the Empire recap, which is inside of the Michael section of the mailbag section. Just popping back up the stack.
All right, Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. If you'd like to hit up there. Mac Geek writes in, sorry, late getting this to you, but my reaction from the Point of No Return episode, and then he very kindly rot 13'd it because we had not watched it at that point.
What a classy person.
To say, Dave Filoni be like, that's a cool ship, bro. Fans seem to like it. Be a shame if anything happened to it. Which is, of course, a reference to the Marauder, which gets blown up, much as the Razor Crest got blown up in The Mandalorian. They love blowing up the good guy ships. Tony, did you take a hammer to your Lego model?
I did not.
You have to smash it. Sorry, it's not. It's just my.
I don't make
the rules.
It's up there.
Okay.
So.
I'll get ready.
I'm not. I mean, most Star Wars ships blow up eventually. So do I have to take a hammer to everything?
Yep. Yeah. Correct.
Comes the rules.
Scott writes in.
Do we know what happened to Luke's X-wing? Is it in a museum on Coruscant?
No, we know where it is. It's in a lake.
What?
He flies it into the lake in episode 8. Remember Rey pull it out and then Rey flies it in episode 9. It's still somehow identifiable as Red 5. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Really. I apologize for not remembering something.
It doesn't really make any sense that he identifies as Red 5 because he was promoted to Rogue Leader, like in Empire.
Let's go back and talk about the fact they kill the Blue Leader and they don't really give him his due. I still would like to go back to that moment.
You were mad about that last episode, too.
Yes. Yeah. I've been mad about that for many years.
It's true.
Justice Cat is Justice Blue Leader.
I'm going to make you a shirt.
I would wear that shirt.
I'm not going to make you a shirt. Tony's going to make you a shirt.
I would wear Justice for Blue Leader. 100%.
I'm probably going to have to make that shirt.
We need more merch, by the way. And a reminder to buy our Purgle and Squeak shirt.
Yeah, we could have that, too. How many shirts can you put on your... if there's the whole thing about slots.
No. It's technically full, but I can rotate one of the other things off, so...
Justice for Blue Leader, it's going to sell like hotcakes.
It will sell one to you and possibly a second one to your child. And then I'll leave it on the store for a year.
All right. So Scott,
we know how the system works.
I've almost gotten to the next comment. Scott has a somewhat lengthier story, but I'm going to read it because it was broken up into several posts. Scott says, just started watching Bad Batch Season 3 and, of course, catching up in ACP. I'm 40-something and I am aware of moonlighting. My mom hated it, and also Bruce Willis. It took until Pulp Fiction.
Can't update the graph. Yep, update the graph.
Yep. It's unusual. Yep. I mean, no, but he is a post-40 aware of Moonlight. Mm. Interesting, though, that his mother did not like moonlighting, because I feel like the general response of folks has been they got through it to their mothers. So also read that. So his mother also hated Bruce Willis?
Hated it, and also Bruce Willis. It took until Pulp Fiction and The Fifth Element for me to discover him on my own and only just watch Die Hard about 3 years ago, right before Christmas, because I'd heard it was a Christmas movie.
It's not. It's just, I don't.
Is a Christmas, 100% Christmas movie. Also, because you said something.
I refuse to split the vote here. We'll allow this one just to continue in.
That's like saying Home Alone's a Christmas movie.
You're just trolling now. You're just trolling. Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah, the good one. The one from the 90s.
This lightsaber is non-functional. also, because you said something about the prequels as they relate to kids, my daughter broke up with her first boyfriend in kindergarten over an argument about Star Wars. She thought it was a lifesaver, him a lightsaber. I failed her, we watched and bonded over episodes 4 through 6, and everyone was happy again. Until a few weeks later, she comes home, and we had to have the hard conversation. My friends told me there are 3 more movies. This was before episode 7. We had the talk, and I reluctantly watched them with her. Surprisingly, she really liked them, even Jar Jar, and she absolutely loved Padme.
That's awesome. I also thought it was a lifesaver a long time.
That's why green lifesavers are the best.
Oh my god. Including the pineapple ones, but...
Lucas writes in, I'm way late and I think I listened out of order.
Oh, no.
But I don't remember hearing this part of this factoid. Clones can have accelerated or regular aging. This part was covered. Boba Fett is a clone with regular aging asked for by his father, quote unquote, Jango. Big fan of the podcast. Never seen Moonlighting, but learned about it from a podcast on movies. Yes, I do think we know this. I don't know if we mentioned this, but yeah, when in episode 2, when Boba Fett is a kid or whatever, the Kaminoans specifically tell Jango, like, as promised, here is an unaltered clone.
I figure that's what happened to Omega. Him and Omega and Boba Fett.
Omega is younger than Boba
Fett.
But
also they're aging naturally.
Yes.
They weren't accelerated.
They do give Boba Fett, like, here is your aging naturally 5-year-old, though, right? Like, he's not a baby. They do. They're like,
can you imagine? I want the series of Jango Fett having to take care of a baby.
It's called The Mandalorian.
Touche.
But less cute and probably more obnoxious.
Yeah. But so it is that weird thing where it's like, here is a child. We have skipped them up to the point where they can be played by an actor with dialogue. But now they will age great and naturally from here on. I was unclear if it was. I guess I was unclear, and this is probably not worth arguing about. It's like, are they aging naturally, or what age they start at, I guess, is kind of the question.
Yeah, I think similar to the entire conversation of how does Starfleet Academy actually work that happened before the podcast, and no one has any idea what we're talking about, is like, I don't know if they have a clear answer, and I'm not sure it matters.
Yeah, they go back and forth, because there are some episodes, I want to say there are episodes in Clone Wars where Boba Fett, doesn't he sneak in at one point with a bunch of other clones that are all teenagers?
Like little cadets.
Yeah exactly. Like so there is...
They were like teenagers for like 2 weeks and like...
Yeah, it's, exactly. It's unclear. They have not
I think
really
they're specifically like the officers, theoretically. They're the feature officers, which ties back to our previously unrecorded conversation,
but,
Pat.
We should record all of our conversations all the time. I think the only thing that is relevant to this conversation...
The only thing.
Yeah, I'm with Michael McCall, and this is really important. Everyone needs to hear it. Is the question of it helps determine the question of what happens to all the clones, because it could be the reason there are no clones because they all just die off because they age faster, or something else really bad happened to the clones. That's I think the only question that is relevant is like, is it the explanation for why there are no clones other than Rex and Return of the Jedi?
Basically, is it natural causes or like were they all
right? And why do some of them survive, like Rex and Gregor and Wolf, into rebels?
Great
and
genes.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Well, I mean,
that's
why
a joke.
Why does Omega have the M-count transference and no other?
Yeah, she's a special clone.
But is she designed that way, or is that just random chance?
Well, that's a question.
We've never had that. That question has not been answered.
Nature versus nurture for clones. Yep.
Well, it's mainly, genetics. It's not nature versus nature.
Yeah.
They didn't nurture her into having an M count, presumably.
No. But the question of like how much... question is there any genetic variation even among the existing clones, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, she's a girl, so clearly
obviously. But she was clearly... like there wasn't like, oh, this one's a girl. She was like, no. Like, clearly they designed her. But I'm not talking about her. I'm talking like all the other clones.
Yeah.
Is there any variation in them?
I think you could... argue just purely from, oh, I don't know, personality? I don't know.
But this is the question, but is that nurture or is that nature?
That's a good question.
Right? It is nature versus nurture.
But yeah, I think the element of Omega existing is still an interesting question, because at some point somebody decide, hey, you know what? We got a lot of clones. Let's make a couple female clones. And you're like, why?
Oh, I'm going back several years now. The first episodes of Bad Batch were on Kaminoa, right? Mm-hmm. And we see their labs and we know they're making some kind of like weird ones.
Yeah.
There was a whole episode about that I now no longer have any recollection of, other than it existed.
Right. I mean, we still don't have a good answer as to Emery's existence either.
She may not be a clone.
You still are going down these. You think she lied? Or was lied to?
It wasn't confirmed. I think we were all assuming it, but I do not think it was confirmed.
I thought they explicitly said it.
Yeah, I think she just called each other sisters.
I was pretty sure it was explicit that she was a clone.
I don't know. Go back and watch that episode.
I don't need to. I just have Wikipedia. Final comment comes from a different Michael, but we know that 75% of our listeners are
Michaels.
People named
Hi,
Michael.
Michael
says, true or false, about 70% of quote problems unquote on Bad Batch would be skipped if they just stole a set of clean white stormtrooper uniforms. I believe we did discuss this in the episode.
It's so hard to keep them white is the problem.
Yeah, it is weird that they chose.
They show those scuffs. Presumably, they have really limited peripheral vision.
I mean, it would be convenient if they had that and or basic clone armor, I guess. But I was surprised there was a point in this episode where I thought they would try to steal stormtrooper armor.
Why do they just some in the back, like in like a costume?
I think they're not the kind of people that have a disguise closet. It's just they're not cosplayers. They just
also we do know.
You know they're living life on the run. They literally, oh, you know what? Here's your generous headcanon.
It was destroyed. It was on the Marauder ship.
It was on the ship.
There we go.
They did have a costume box.
It's acceptable.
And it was blown up.
Yeah.
And now they don't have it
we
anymore.
We also do know canonically from a couple of the other episodes that they say the Stormtrooper armor is not as good as the clone armor.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah.
Right. So my point is, they're like, well, we could dress up as Stormtroopers, but if somebody starts shooting at us, we are going to die.
Yeah.
Just FYI, the first line of Emery's Wikipedia page is, Dr. Emery Carr was a human female clone created from the genetic template of the Mandalorian bounty hunter Jango Fett.
So you say.
Which then cites the episode in which it was
said, so you say.
I don't think that's the delivery that you want. Okay.
Words and tone are funny, aren't they?
Yeah.
Sure.
Nailed it. Any other comments before we wrap up an uncharacteristically short episode for me? Kat, would you like to go on a tangent for some 15 minutes or so?
I just, you gotta give me a second to work into this.
Okay, no, I don't. All right.
If someone's not interrupting somebody else, what's the point?
Yeah, right?
Right, Kat? Yeah.
I only want to go on a tangent if it's not sort of welcome.
Would you like to roll directly into our Starfleet Academy, why are there no non-commissioned officers conspiracy
theories? Doesn't make sense. Okay. Where are all the NCOs on the ship?
I believe it was threatened, by the way, while I was sick last week in the Incomparable Member Discord. Mm-hmm. Somebody wanted an episode that is just Tony and Kat going off the rails, essentially.
Dan, how do you feel about that? What does that mean to you?
I mean, let me put it this way. I'm not editing or publishing it, so somebody else wants to.
I would assume you'd still be here as a sound engineer.
Oh, no, no. This was, I think, implied, like, well, you're sick. You can just go off and do something else.
You know, I think, I can only speak for myself, but Kat, I feel like an important thing of going off the rails is there has to be a rail.
Yes.
You got to have the rails.
Yes.
Yeah, without the rails, without Dan, what are we? We're just like
we would have. Like,
cats
we actually
in a bag.
Have very normal conversations all the time. Of just
this would be this is the suggestions. Somebody said I would definitely, as insane as it sounds, I would definitely sign up for an off the rails Kat and Tony bonus episode. Somebody else said it'll be 7 hours long. Somebody else says I was about to say nobody's got enough available phone storage for that. Maybe if they export it as mono. I think technically all our podcasts are mono. And then somebody else suggested they can release it on a USB drive. And then someone else said 7 hours on moonlighting,
which neither of us have
we
seen.
We have not seen.
We could talk about
what do you think happens in episode two of Moonlight.
What is your favorite television show, Tony, outside of anything Star Wars?
My answer for a long time was The Wire, I think it's probably still The Wire, though it has been a while since I have rewatched The Wire. I feel like we are now deviating from the complicated
like we're going to talk for a podcast, like what was our, we'd have to like pre-plan our rabbit holes.
We could talk about Star Trek for like 6 hours.
Oh, that's
easy.
True. Yeah, we would do,
My co-host on Biff will be very
annoyed.
We're
in danger of doing that all the time.
Because my co-host on Biff famously try to keep creating a show within the show called The Warp Core, which is this.
Everyone's
that I'm
familiar
about,
with your other podcast, yeah.
I don't know.
We know all about that.
I don't assume people are familiar.
Yeah. You're on another podcast?
I mean, we're talking about Biff. We're not talking about, what's the other one? John Maltz's show? Rubond? I couldn't think of another word that sounded like rebound that wasn't rebound, so I just made noises. Sorry. Friday Night Energy!
Okay, I think it's time to wrap up.
I have 10 more minutes of my derailment allowed.
Okay, you can bank it for a future episode.
There we go. We'll do. Noted. For the record.
If you would like to send in a letter, you can find us at acp@theincomparable.com on email or on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. And of course, we also pop into the Incomparable Member Discord a bit, so you can find us there probably. Hey, speaking of the Incomparable Member Discord, if you're not a member of the Incomparable, you should go sign up and become a member of the Incomparable, because not only does it get a lot of cool benefits like bonus episodes and bootleg episodes and access to the member Discord, but you get to support your favorite shows, which could include A Complicated Profession. So go to theincomparable.com/members. Plans start at just $7 a month, I believe. And you can get lots of cool stuff.
And I also say, I don't remember the link, but you should guys go buy our t-shirt, Purgles and Squigs, Attorney at Law. What's the link again?
HelloNerds.shop.
.shop. Or you can let us know via email or Mastodon that you would rather a Justice for Blue Leader shirt, and we'll do that slot instead.
We can have both. All right.
I mean, I literally have a finite number of shirts I can put on here, Dan.
So. How did you run into that limit? Anyways, I've got space on mine.
Okay. The limit is 10.
It's only 10? I thought it was like 50.
No. The limit is 10.
How does John Maltz have so many shirts then?
I think he sells more shirts, so he gets a higher limit.
Oh, okay. So the answer is buy more Purgle and Squig shirts, and we will get to add the Blue Leader shirt.
I mean, we don't need people to do that.
Oh, it's nice, though. All right. We will be back next week to cover the penultimate episode of Bad Batch. But until then, I would like to thank my co-hosts. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Goodbye, nerds.
Kat Banish, always a pleasure.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We really appreciate it. We will see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.